Something rough scraped against his face, again and again, until it felt as if the skin itself was being stripped away from the flesh underneath. Frank didn't know what kind of torture this was, but it was effective at bringing him out of his unconsciousness. The discomfort was welcome, in a way. It told him that he was still alive. The dead felt no pain. Something whined in his ear and started licking his face again. Frank forced his muscles to work and rolled onto his side. This time he was able to open his eyes, and he found himself staring into Wolf's furry face. Above him, Stormy leaned down and nudged Frank's shoulder again. Frank rolled all the way over onto his belly. Sand and gravel pressed into his cheek, but for a long time he was too weak to move. Gradually, he got his arms underneath himself and forced his head up. He saw Stormy's reins dangling in front of him as the Big Appaloosa stood steadfastly beside him. Wolf sat down a few feet away and watched Frank curiously, evidently satisfied by the fact that his master was still alive, if not well. Propping himself on an elbow, Frank reached out with his other hand and closed his fingers around the trailing reins. He twisted his hand, wrapping the leather straps around it so that he couldn't let go. Then he got hold of the reins with his other hand.
Back! Stormy! Back!
The horse took a couple of steps backward, following Frank's command. At the same time, Frank held tightly to the reins and pulled himself up with all his meager strength. His right ankle felt as if someone had jabbed a knife in it, but it supported him enough so that he didn't fall.
Stand still, boy.
The Appaloosa didn't budge as Frank leaned against him. Frank moved one hand from the reins to the saddle horn. With that to steady him, he stood there, waiting for the trembling in his muscles to stop and the pounding in his head to go away. Eventually, he felt a lot steadier, although the anvil chorus inside his skull continued with a shattering crescendo each time his pulse beat. His ankle hurt like blazes, too. Still leaning on Stormy, he took his hand off the saddle horn and gingerly touched the side of his head above his left ear. His fingertips prodded a big goose egg coated with dried blood from the gash in his scalp. Obviously, the black scorpion had escaped, leaving Frank lying senseless on the ground. The bandit must have believed him to be dead. Otherwise, he would have finished him off. Blinking bleary eyes, Frank peered around. It was daylight, early in the morning, he guessed. The sky was still mostly overcast, and the air was cold and dry. There were a few breaks in the clouds, however, and it was through one of those gaps that the sun had shone directly into Frank's eyes when he tried to open them. He estimated that at least 12 hours had passed since the rangers had attacked the Black Scorpion's camp. What had happened since that time? Had the rangers wiped out the bandidos, except for the leader who had gotten away? And why hadn't Wedge and the others come to look for him?
Maybe they have.
They might be riding through the semi-arid Mexican landscape right now, searching for him. Or they might figure that he had been killed in the fight and ridden back to the Rio Grande, leaving him here. Even though he hurt like hell and had a bad ankle, Frank wasn't too worried now about his survival. He had Stormy and Wolf to keep him company and help him. He had a Winchester and plenty of rounds for it in his saddlebags. He even had some jerky and biscuits he had brought with him from the Rocking Tee. And as he looked around some more, he discovered that he still had his Colt, too. He spotted it lying on the ground about 20 feet away. Holding tightly to the reins, he hobbled over to pick up the revolver. After checking the barrel to make sure it wasn't fouled, he slid the weapon back into leather. He found his hat, too, not far off, and hung it on the saddle horn for now. As bad as his head hurt, he didn't even want to think about putting a hat on it.
No, it's just a matter of getting back to the border.
Once he did, he thought he could find his way to the Rocking Tee. They would welcome him there, and he could spend a few days recuperating from the banging around he had received. He began to look around, searching for tracks. It didn't take him long to find them, the hoofprints of one horse leading toward the mountains. He knew he was in no shape to be trying to track down the bandit leader, but once the thought was in his head, he couldn't shake it. Grimly, Frank considered the tracks for a long moment. His ankle was sprained, but not broken, he decided, and he was able to stand on it long enough to get his left foot in the stirrup and swing it up onto Stormy's back. Then he hitched the Appaloosa into a walk, following a course that paralleled the tracks left behind by the fleeing Black Scorpion. The life he had led had blessed Frank with a hardy constitution. His recuperative powers came into play during that morning as he followed the Black Scorpion's trail into the foothills of the mountains. While he was still far from being at top strength, he no longer felt as weak as a kitten. The pain in his head had receded into a dull ache that was bearable, though still annoying. He wouldn't be able to move very fast on foot because of that bad ankle, but as long as he was on horseback, he thought he could handle most trouble that might come his way. The landscape had changed when he entered the foothills. There was more grass on the ground, and some of the hills were dotted with pine trees. He saw a few cattle here and there. But when he came close enough to one of the animals to be able to make out the brand on its hip, he couldn't read it. The brand was the usual skillet of snakes sort preferred by Mexican ranchers. They could make sense of the markings even when no one else could. Frank wondered if he was on Don Felipe Almanzar's range and if those were Almanzar's cows. The trail grew harder to follow as the ground became rockier and less sandy. Frank thought about turning around and heading for the border, but he was too stubborn to give up on his quest. He wanted to find the Black Scorpion. He rode along a canyon between two of the hills.
This whole thing might be crazy. Just a wild goose chase.
Somewhere up ahead, somebody screamed.
No, not somebody. Something.
Unless he was badly mistaken, that had been the screech of a mountain lion. He knew such creatures were to be found here in these Mexican sierras. Horses had a natural aversion to the big cats, and Stormy hesitated, not wanting to go on down the canyon toward the sound. Alongside, Wolf curled his lip and snarled as the thick fur on his back ruffled up. The scream of the mountain lion came again, followed by another cry. Frank stiffened in the saddle as he realized that the terrified shriek had come from a human throat, a woman's throat.
I know you don't like it, boy, but let's go. Here.
The trail went around a bend up ahead. Frank drew his Winchester from the saddle sheath as Stormy rounded the turn at top speed. The gunfighter's eyes took in the scene before him instantly. About 50 yards ahead of him, a huge, tawny mountain lion crouched atop a rock outcropping that loomed over the trail. The big cat's tail swished back and forth rapidly as it poised to leap on its prey. The only thing holding back the mountain lion was its indecision as it tried to choose between two victims. A black horse danced around skittishly, trying to pull free from where its reins were caught in some brush. That was the only thing that kept it from bolting in terror. A few yards away lay a young woman in a riding outfit, boots, split skirt, a leather vest over a blousy white shirt, and a hat with its neck strap tight under her chin. She had pushed herself into a half-sitting position and was staring in horror at the mountain lion. Frank knew that she must have been riding along the trail when the big cat leaped to the top of the rocks and screamed. That had caused her mount to shy and rear up, throwing her. Then the horse had tried to run, but had gotten snagged in the brush alongside the trail. Frank knew it as well as if he had seen it happen. Just as he knew that within a second or two at most, the mountain lion would spring. He yanked Stormy to a halt and brought the rifle to his shoulder in one smooth motion. His aches and pains were all forgotten as muscles and nerves trained by long years of danger galvanized into action. The big cat leaped from the top of the rocks like a tawny lightning bolt. Frank's rifle kicked hard against his shoulder as it blasted. The mountain lion jerked and yowled and twisted in midair as the bullet caught it. Falling short of the young woman, the cat rolled and flailed with its paws as its blood pumped out onto the dirt of the trail.
Get away from there!
The young woman scrambled to her feet and ran away from the wounded mountain lion. Frank levered another round into the Winchester's chamber, lifted the rifle again, and drew a bead. The mountain lion stretched out, quivered and trembled for a moment, and then lay still. Frank heeled Stormy into a walk that carried them toward the young woman. She stood beside the trail with her hands pressed to her mouth, her gaze jerking back and forth between Frank and the dead mountain lion. She appeared to be around 20 years old and definitely lovely, with long black hair, dark eyes, and smooth olive skin.
Are you all right, Señorita?
Señor.
What's your name? Su nombre.
I speak English, Señor. My name is Carmen Maria Luisa Almanzar. You are hurt, Señor.
Yeah, I was attacked, but I'll be all right.
Who assaulted you, Señor? Bandits?
I don't know. I never got a look at them. I assume they intended to rob me. They creased my head with a bullet. I was knocked unconscious. When I came to, whoever shot me was gone.
Perhaps your wolf frightened them away.
Frank glanced around and saw Wolf sniffing at the carcass of the mountain lion.
Get away from there.
Wolf obediently abandoned the body to come trotting over to Frank. Carmen shrank back a little at the big cur's approach.
You don't have to worry about him. He's a dog, and he's friendly when I tell him to be.
Si, señor. I will take your word for it. Who are you, señor? What are you doing on Almanzar land? Oh, that sounds rude and so ungrateful. I would not be alive now if you had not killed that awful beast.
You're welcome as you can be, Señorita Almanzar. I'm just glad I came along in time to help. As for me, my name is Frank Morgan. I'm just drifting. I never stay in one place for too long. I was looking for a nice, warm place to spend the winter.
But, señor, you are in Mexico.
A warm, friendly country, from everything I've heard.
Not that friendly. Not now. Not for gringos. Or anyone else.
I reckon I'm beginning to see what you mean. You have a bandit problem down here, don't you?
Bandits. And others. You must come with me to my father's hacienda. His rancho is the biggest one in this part of Mexico. And once he hears how you saved my life, he will welcome you, Señor Morgan. To be honest, he has little use for gringos. But in your case, I am sure he will make an exception.
I could use a place to rest up for a spell. I twisted my ankle, too, so I'm a mite hobbled right now.
Let me get my horse, and I will take you to the hacienda.
Carmen went over to the black mare, which had settled down some once the big cat was dead. It took Carmen a moment to free the reins from the brush.
What about the mountain lion? You want me to throw a rope on it and haul it in so you can have the hide?
Not at all. If my brother killed a cat like that, he would want to mount the head as a trophy. A barbaric custom, if you ask me.
They rode side by side along the canyon, Carmen indicating the way they should go.
If I'm not being too forward, what were you doing out riding around by yourself like that?
This is my father's rancho. I ride where and when I please.
They came to a better traveled trail that led through the foothills. From a high spot on the trail, Frank looked to the northeast and saw rangeland stretching into the distance toward the Rio Grande. Here, along the edge of the mountains, the pastures were fairly lush with grass, or at least they would be during the spring and summer. The advancing season had made the vegetation die down a bit. Farther out on the flat, the land was drier and it would take more acres to support a cow. Or did they measure land in hectares on this side of the border? And Frank couldn't remember, and he knew it didn't really matter what they called it. The Almanzar Ranch appeared to be a good spread. Better, probably, than the Rocking Tee across the border.
My father's hacienda is only a few miles away.
Frank noticed dust rising from the trail a few hundred yards ahead of them. He reined in, causing Carmen to do likewise.
Somebody's coming.
Is it more than one rider?
I don't think so, but I can't be sure about that just yet.
Carmen reached for her saddlebag, opened it, and drew out a small pistol.
You reckon it might be bandits?
Perhaps.
The man came in sight, riding swiftly toward them on a big gray.
I know that horse. That is my brother riding it. Antonio! Antonio!
The young man wore a fine suit of brown cloth, decorated with embroidered gold threads. His flat-crowned hat was a darker brown. The tight trousers were tucked into high-topped boots, and strapped onto the boots were spurs with the big rowels that Mexican horsemen usually preferred. His saddle and the gray's harness were worked with silver trappings. He was a fine young grandee, Frank thought, the very picture of a wealthy hacendado's son.
Carmen!
His dark, handsome face contorted with anger as he looked over at Frank. The young man jabbed his spurs into the Gray's flanks and sent the horse leaping forward. At the same time, his hand flashed toward the butt of the revolver holstered on his hip.
Antonio, no!
Carmen desperately spurred her own mount forward, getting between Frank and her brother. Instinct had made Frank reach for his own gun. The Colt had come out of the holster in less than the blink of an eye. It was already up and leveled, but Frank held off on the trigger as the girl got in the way.
Por favor, Señor Morgan, do not kill my brother.
Carmen, get back! Get away from the bandit!
Antonio hadn't drawn his gun. Carmen's action had startled him and kept him from completing the hook and draw he had started.
Take it easy, senor. I'm not a bandit.
You are a gringo. You must be down here to rob us. Look at you. You have your gun out like a common killer.
You went for your iron first, son. But I'll holster mine. There. That ought to make you feel better.
Antonio, Señor Morgan saved my life. And this is the way you greet him.
Saved your life?
Yes, my horse had thrown me, and a mountain lion sprang at me. Señor Morgan shot the beast out of the air, even as it leaped. Never have I seen such a shot.
That is incredible. I thank you for saving my sister's life, señor. My foolish sister, who should not have been out riding alone.
Foolish, am I?
Indeed. When our father realized you were gone, he sent me to look for you. You defy his wishes all too often, Carmen.
My life is my own, to lead as I see fit.
Come. I will accompany you back to the hacienda.
What about Señor Morgan?
It seems my family owes you a debt. Come with us so that we can repay you.
Gracias.
The three of them rode on, with Antonio looking a little askance at Wolf as the big cur trotted along with them.
That is an ugly brute.
Yep, that he is. But he's the best dog I ever ran into.
I will take your word for it, senor. What happened to you?
Señor Morgan was shot by bandits. Or perhaps by someone else.
Es verdad?
It's just a graze. I'm lucky it wasn't a whole lot worse.
Sí. Lucky.
A short time later, they came within sight of the Almanzar Hacienda. It was a sprawling two-story structure of whitewashed adobe with a red-tiled roof. Frank could tell that it was built Spanish style around an open central plaza. Nearby were several large barns and corrals, along with a long bunkhouse made of logs and other adobe outbuildings. Like the rocking tea, there was an air of prosperity and success about the place. If anything, the Almanzar Hacienda was even more impressive than Cecil Tolliver's spread. The hacienda was cupped in a shallow bowl on the side of a hill. Frank, Carmen, and Antonio rode down the slope toward the big house. A man stepped out of the log bunkhouse, looked up and saw them coming, and began ringing a bell that hung beside the door on a post. A good-sized group of men had assembled in response to the bell by the time Frank and his two companions reached the hacienda. All of them, except one, were typical vaqueros. They all carried pistols, and each man had his hand close to the butt of his gun. The lone exception carried no weapon that Frank could see. He was tall, broad-shouldered, wore high boots, tight trousers, and a white shirt. A crimson bandana was tied around his throat. His dark hair was long, and a fierce mustache drooped over his mouth. His darkly tanned face resembled a hatchet. Frank had no doubt the man was Don Felipe Almanzar, and even though he was an aristocrat, there was Indian blood somewhere in his lineage. The high, sharply planed cheekbones were proof enough of that.
Carmen, where were you?
I went for a ride. You should know by now that is my habit, Papa.
I know your habit is to take foolish chances with your own life and the lives of those I sent to look for you, including your own brother. You know it is no longer safe for a young woman to ride alone in these hills.
It was not my wish to endanger anyone. I did not think
you
that...
You can stop when you say that you did not think. Who is this injured gringo?
My name is Frank Morgan, Don Felipe. My apologies for trespassing on your land. I did not mean to cause trouble.
It looks as if trouble has found you despite your intentions, Señor Morgan. What happened to you?
I was bushwhacked. A shot grazed me, knocked me out.
Whoever attacked you did not cut your throat or steal your horse?
Nope. I reckon something must have spooked him.
My apologies to you, senor. You are a Texan, are you not?
That's right. although I've traveled around a lot over the years.
I have no trust or affection for Texans, but I would not have a stranger come to harm on my land.
You have reason to feel grateful to Senor Morgan, Papa. He saved me from a mountain lion.
Please accept the hospitality of my house and come inside, Senor Morgan. I would hear of this encounter with the Lion of the Mountains.
Gracias, Don Felipe.
Once they entered the cool, shadowy interior of the house, a mozo appeared to take Frank's hat. Frank gave it to the servant, who hung it carefully on a peg set in the adobe wall. For a moment, as he looked around, Frank almost thought he was back at the rocking tee. There were no mounted animal heads, however, and instead of a cavalry saber, a pair of thin-bladed rapiers hung on the wall.
Do you require medical attention, Senor Morgan? I can have one of the Indian women tend to your wound.
Perhaps later. There's not much that can be done for it, other than washing off some of this dried blood.
You might be surprised. There are compresses and other such things. These Indians can sometimes work wonders with their cures and remedies.
I know. I'm all right for now, though.
What about your leg? I noticed that you limp rather badly.
The ankle's just twisted. I'm not going to be running any races anytime soon, but I think I'll be all right.
As you wish. Can I offer you a glass of brandy?
Actually, right now, a cup of coffee sounds mighty good. And maybe something to eat.
Of course.
In rapid Spanish, Almanzar issued orders to his major domo, and the old man scurried out of the room to carry them out. Almanzar gestured for Frank to have a seat on a cowhide-covered divan.
Now, about this mountain lion.
The cat frightened my horse, Papa, and I was thrown
Please,
off.
Please, allow our guest to tell the story, Carmencita.
Your daughter has a straight of it, Senor. I was riding along after I came to from being knocked out, and I heard the mountain lion scream ahead of me. I might have tried to avoid it, but then the Senorita screamed too, and I knew I had to go lend a hand.
Carmen claims this man shot the lion out of the air.
He did!
It was a lucky shot, I reckon. Didn't have time for anything else. That big cat had to choose between going after the Senorita or the horse, and he'd made up his mind.
You are obviously a man who has much skill with guns. I am in your debt, Senor. I owe you for my daughter's life.
This man Morgan should be a good shot, Papa. I recognize his name now. He is the infamous gringo gunfighter known as the Drifter. And I would not be surprised if he had been sent here by Cecil Tolliver to assassinate you.
Is this true, Senor?
Which part? Am I sometimes called the Drifter? I reckon I am. And some folks regard me as a gunfighter. I guess the description fits. But I'm not an assassin. Never have been. Nobody sent me here either. I came on my own.
To kill me?
Not hardly. I don't have a thing in the world against you, Don Felipe.
Do not listen to him, Papa. You know that no gringo can be trusted. No matter what he says, he must be Tolliver's man.
I'm nobody's man but my own.
All right. As a guest in my house, you will be treated with respect, Senor Morgan. But I warn you, if you seek to harm me or my family, you will regret it.
I told you, I didn't come down here looking for trouble.
The tense atmosphere in the room eased a bit as the mozo came in carrying a tray with a coffee pot and cups. A couple of heavy-set Indian women followed him with platters containing tortillas, strips of meat, peppers, and beans. They set the food on a table to one side. The old man placed the coffee on the table as well and began filling the cups from the pot. Don Felipe waved a hand, inviting Frank to help himself. He and his two children, the only ones Frank had seen so far at least, joined him. The coffee was thick and sweet, though it held a hint of bitterness from the chocolate that had been melted into it, and the food was excellent.
Do you know the man, Tolliver?
I know who he is. A rancher who has a spread on the other side of the border. A rockin' tea, isn't it?
Once he was just a simple rancher, perhaps. When he first came, I took him to be an honest man. But he has shown his true colors over the years. He is a thief and a scoundrel.
What's he stolen?
He has stocked his ranch with our cattle.
Rustler, eh?
And our vaqueros have been attacked. Some have been killed.
How long has this been going on?
For years. Many long years.
That is not true, Papa, and you know it.
Do not dispute your elders, child. You know nothing of this.
I know that until recent months, we lost only a few cows, and they were probably taken by the Yaquis who live high in the mountains. And when our men were attacked, it was by bandidos.
Perhaps once, but no longer. Now it is Tolliver's men who plague us.
You don't know that. You only hate Señor Tolliver because of what happened with Mama.
Enough. I will listen to no more. Carmen, leave us. Go to your room and stay there.
No! You are not being fair!
My apologies for my daughter's disrespectful behavior, Señor. Since her mother's unfortunate passing, Carmen has grown even more headstrong. My late wife, may El Señor Dios rest her soul, knew better than I how to deal with the whims of a young woman.
See, the best way is with a strap and a strong arm.
Silence. I will not hear of such things. Again, my apologies, Señor Morgan.
No apologies necessary, Señor Almanzar. I don't know from personal experience, but I imagine that raising children is a tricky business.
Of all the travails that may befall a man, Señor, none is heavier than the weight of trying to do the right thing. Will you stay with us for a few days, Señor Morgan, or do you prefer to move on?
If that's an offer, Don Felipe, then I accept. I appreciate your hospitality, and I appreciate the opportunity to let this banged-up head and ankle of mine heal a mite before I move on.
It is done, then. You will remain here as my guest as long as you wish, Señor Morgan. It is the least I can do to repay you for my daughter's life. She is at times a vexation, but still precious to me.
I reckon that's probably the way most folks feel about their youngsters, Don Felipe.
When the meal was finished, Almanzar summoned the elderly servant again and instructed him to show Frank to his quarters. Before Frank followed the old mozo out of the room, Almanzar took a heavy walking stick carved out of some sort of dark, heavy wood from a stand in a corner and presented it to him.
This was my father's, Señor Morgan. May it ease your steps while you are with us.
Thank you, Don Felipe. I'm much obliged.
Frank followed the servant through a door and along a walkway with pillared openings to the central plaza along one side. On the other side were arched doorways that led into sleeping quarters. The old man opened one of the heavy doors and ushered Frank into a room with thick adobe walls, a single narrow window with its shutters closed, and a bed with a straw mattress. One chair sat in a corner. Frank nodded his thanks to the mozo, who lit a candle in a wall sconce, then shuffled out and closed the door behind him. Frank dropped his hat on the bed and sat down beside it. The past 36 hours had been filled with action and violence, and weariness gripped him. Almost without thinking about it, he stretched out on the soft mattress, and despite all his intentions, he was asleep within moments. Frank felt some alarm when he woke up and realized that he had dozed off. He pushed himself into a sitting position and swung his legs off the bed. His ankles still hurt, though, as he discovered when he tried to stand up. He sat back down and got his weight off it. He reached down and worked his boot off. His ankle was swollen, and it might have been a mistake to remove the boot.
Might have a hard time getting that back on.
He took a bandana from one of the hip pockets of his jeans and used it to bind up the injured ankle, tying it tightly. When he stood up, the ankle still twinged painfully, but it didn't hurt as much as it had before. A frown creased his forehead as he noticed that his saddlebags were draped over the back of the chair. They hadn't been there earlier. That meant someone had brought them in while he was asleep and left them there without disturbing him. That shouldn't have happened. No one should have been able to come into the room without alerting him. He gave a little shake of his head. Brooding about it now wasn't going to help. He resolved not to let it happen again. Not wanting to try to pull his boot back on, Frank took the other one off instead, and in his stocking feet he went to the window. The shutters swung open when he unlatched them, so he definitely wasn't a prisoner here. A cool breeze blew into the room. Outside, the sky was dark blue and purple as the light of day faded. The breeze made the candle flame flicker behind him and then go out. The room was plunged into darkness, relieved only by the faint glow from outside. The view from the window was toward the hill behind the house. Frank could see the top of the hill silhouetted against the last vestiges of the sunset, a dark mass against a sweep of fading rose. That fleeting illumination was the only reason he was able to see the rider coming over the hill, skylighted for only a moment before disappearing. Frank listened intently. He couldn't hear any hoofbeats. Had he imagined the rider? Or had the rider swung down from the saddle so that he could approach the hacienda on foot? Something else about what he had seen bothered Frank, and it took him several minutes of hard thought before he realized what it was. All of Almanzar's vaqueros had worn sombreros with very wide brims and short, dimpled crowns. The rider Frank had seen had worn a high-crowned hat, and the brim had been all wrong, too. That was the sort of hat a gringo might wear. And given the hostility toward Norte Americanos Frank had seen displayed on the Almanzar Rancho, why would such a man be sneaking up on the hacienda as night fell? This was a mystery that Frank couldn't ignore. He didn't want to raise an alarm, though, until he was sure that there was really a threat. He eased the shutter closed, and then, still in his stocking feet, turned toward the door of the room. He picked up the walking stick, then put it down again. With the bandana bound tightly around his ankle, he thought he could walk well enough without the stick. The sound it made as it thumped on the tiles would be bound to give him away if he tried to move silently. He just had to be careful and not put too much weight on the bad ankle. Frank limped to the door and paused there long enough to touch the butt of his peacemaker for a moment, moving it a little in the holster to make sure it wouldn't hang on anything. Then he pulled the latch string and put his shoulder to the door, easing it open. Thankfully, the hinges were well oiled and didn't squeal. The tiles of the walkway were cold through his socks, and that chill climbed to his ankle and made it throb slightly. Frank ignored the discomfort. He walked silently to his left, away from the main part of the hacienda. The blue was gone from the sky he saw above the enclosed courtyard. Now the heavens held only swaths of purple and black, dotted with the pinpricks of the stars. He came to a dark, tunnel-like passage through the ground floor of the hacienda. The far end of it was closed off by a wrought iron gate. Frank slipped along the passage, tried the latch, and found that it lifted freely. When he opened the gate, it swung easily and made no noise. He would have stepped through it without hesitation if a faint, almost indistinguishable smell had not caught his attention. He leaned closer to the hinges on which the gate hung and touched a fingertip to the top hinge. His fingers came away slick. He rubbed it with his thumb and held it to his nose. Oil of some sort, and freshly applied. Someone had gone through this gate a short time earlier, but only after applying oil to the hinges so they wouldn't make any noise. Frank would have been willing to bet that the gate was normally kept locked. Someone inside the house had unlocked it and used it to slip out into the night. Either that, or they had unlocked it to allow someone else to slip in. The rider on the hill? The rider hadn't had time to get down here yet, so he was still out there, somewhere in the darkness. He might try to sneak into the hacienda. If someone had gone out to meet him, that person would probably come back this way. If either of the two possibilities were correct, Frank could wait right here and let the mystery come to him. With a twisted ankle and no boots, that seemed like the best idea. He eased the gate closed again and moved back in the corridor that ran from the courtyard to the hacienda's outer wall. The darkness around him was as thick and impenetrable as ink as he leaned back against the adobe wall to wait. As he stood there, he listened. If Frank had been forced to guess, he would say that he had been standing there in the darkness for about half an hour when he finally heard the gate being unlatched. Whoever it was opened the gate, but only narrowly, slipped through, and then eased it closed behind them. The gate was locked again. Frank didn't move as the person who had just come in walked quietly toward him. The steps were light. Had the figure Frank had seen been that of a woman? He thought it was possible, but he hadn't gotten a good enough look to be sure.
De colores, de colores se viste.
The next moment, he was certain, as he caught a whiff of a flower-scented fragrance and then heard a little snatch of a song as the woman sang to herself in Spanish. Frank recognized the words and the tune. It was a Mexican love song. He recognized the voice of the young woman singing it, too. The voice belonged to Carmen Almanzar. Frank didn't move, didn't even breathe as Carmen went past him. He was sure she had no idea he was there. She thought she had gotten away to her evening rendezvous without anyone being the wiser. Clearly, given her attitude and the song she sang, she had slipped out of the hacienda to meet a lover. One of her father's vaqueros? Frank thought that was unlikely. He believed that Carmen had gone out to meet the man he had seen riding over the hill behind the hacienda, a man who wore the hat of a gringo. Frank waited until she was gone. Then he went back to his room, still moving quietly, turning over in his mind everything he had just seen and heard. He had only been back in his room a few minutes, just long enough to scratch a lucifer to life and relight the candle on the wall. Frank opened the door and found the mozo standing there.
Don Felipe awaits you in the dining room, senor.
Dinner time, is it?
Si, senor.
Good. It's been long enough since that snack that I'm hungry again. I don't know if I can get a boot back on my right foot, though.
Wait here a moment, por favor.
Frank waited, and a couple of minutes later, the servant returned carrying a pair of finely worked moccasins with fringed tops that would come as high on the calf as most boots.
Try these, senor.
Frank sat on the bed and pulled on the moccasins. The soft leather had enough give to it that he was able to get the right one over his swollen ankle. At the same time, the moccasin was tight enough to give the injury even more support. When Frank stood up, his ankle still hurt some, but not nearly as much as it had earlier.
What's your name?
Esteban, senor.
Well, Esteban, you did a fine job by finding these moccasins for me. Muchas gracias.
Hey, nada, senor.
Frank followed the old-timer to a dining room with a vaulted ceiling and a long, highly polished table. Don Felipe and Antonio were already there, but Frank didn't see any sign of Carmen.
Will your daughter not be joining us for dinner?
Carmen has sent her regrets, Senor Morgan. Her experiences today, the mountain lion, you know, have tired her, and she wishes to rest.
I hope she feels better tomorrow.
The Indian servant women began bringing in platters of food and placing them on the table, the air filled with spicy, intriguing aromas. Before the three men could sit down to eat, however, a bell suddenly began to ring outside. Looks of alarm appeared on the faces of both Don Felipe and Antonio. They turned toward the entrance as a rumble of hoofbeats drifted in from the night. From the sound of it, a large group of horsemen had just ridden up to the hacienda. Don Felipe and Antonio started toward the door. Frank was right behind them. Almanzar glanced over his shoulder.
This does not concern you, Senor Morgan.
You've most generously offered me your hospitality, Don Felipe. If troubles come to call, I'd be honored to help you answer.
Come then. Let us see who pays us a visit this night.
A moment later, the three men stepped through a wrought iron gate into the courtyard in front of the hacienda. As Frank had thought, the area was filled with milling horses. A couple of servants, including Esteban, hurried out of the house carrying blazing torches, and the light from the burning brands revealed that the newcomers were not bandidos. Instead, they wore the gray wool jackets and trousers of the Rurales, the Mexican police force responsible for law and order in the far-flung rural areas of the country. Sombreros with slightly smaller brims and slightly higher crowns than those worn by the vaqueros were on their heads, giving them a distinctive appearance. A man dressed in similar but more expensive fashion sat his horse in front of the others. He had a red bandana around his throat, and the buttons of the jacket were silver instead of the more ordinary wood or brass to be found on the uniforms of the other men. The buttons shone in the torchlight, as did the scabbard of the saber he wore at his hip.
Good evening, Don Felipe. I trust you are well.
I am fine, Captain. Please, avail yourself of the comfort of my home.
The Rurale captain swung down from his horse and commanded his sergeant to have the men dismount. He handed the reins of his horse to the sergeant and turned back to Almanzar, Antonio, and Frank. The officer was tall and lean, with a narrow face and a neatly trimmed mustache. He smiled, but his dark eyes were cold as he glanced at Antonio. They warmed slightly with a spark of interest as his gaze turned toward Frank.
A visitor from north of the border.
Senor Frank Morgan of Texas. Senor Morgan, this is Captain Estancia of the Rurales.
Captain Domingo Estancia of the Gendarmería Fiscal, at your service, Senor Morgan. What brings you below the Rio Bravo?
Nothing in particular. Don Felipe was kind enough to extend his hospitality when I found myself on his land.
Señor Morgan is too modest. He was responsible for saving the life of my daughter when she was attacked by a mountain lion.
Indeed.
I was in the right place at the right time to lend the young lady a hand.
And before that, he was attacked by bandits.
Los Ladrones, who ride with the Black Scorpion?
I don't know who they were. Never got a look at them.
My men and I have been in pursuit of the Black Scorpion for days now. Anything you can tell me that might help us will be greatly appreciated, Señor Morgan.
Sorry. Like I told you, I never saw whoever it was who took a pot shot at me.
Ah, well. On behalf of El Presidente Diaz, I apologize for what happened to you, Señor. Such disgraceful things are a shame on our beautiful country.
I'm all right. Nothing to worry about, Captain.
I do not see Señorita Carmen, Don Felipe. I trust she was not injured in her encounter with the mountain lion?
My daughter is fine. She is resting.
Ah. Perhaps I will be blessed with the beauty and graciousness of her presence at a later time.
Perhaps. Señor Morgan, Antonio, and I were about to sit down to dinner. You will join us, of course.
Of course.
The four men went into the hacienda, trailed by Esteban and the other servant carrying torches, which were extinguished once the men were back in the soft yellow glow of the lamps. At an order snapped by Don Felipe, the Indian women hurried to set an extra place at the table.
After many days on the trail, this reminds me of El Presidente's palace. I appreciate your hospitality, Don Felipe.
As always, it is my pleasure to host the representative of El Presidente.
What deviltry has the Black Scorpion been up to this time, Captain?
The damned bandit and his rabble blew up a railroad bridge south of here. When a train came along and was forced to stop, they boarded it and looted it, robbing all the innocent men and women who traveled on it.
When was this?
A little over a week ago. We were able to get on their trail quickly, but despite that, the devils have eluded us.
I heard something about this so-called Black Scorpion on the other side of the border. Folks up there are blaming him for a raid on a ranch northwest of San Rosa several days ago. How could the same gang be operating on both sides of the border with such a short amount of time in between?
Nothing seems to be beyond the capabilities of the Black Scorpion, Señor Morgan. He crosses the Rio Bravo with impunity, daring both the Gendarmería Fiscal and the Texas Rangers to capture him. He seems to know all the trails, all the, what do you call them, shortcuts. So far, the Black Scorpion has had things all his own way. But the time is coming when justice has its day.
That is all one can pray for, that justice will triumph.
Now, I'm not sure anyone will ever catch the Black Scorpion, Captain. It is said he can disappear like a shadow in the night or a puff of wind.
Any man who is human can be caught. And the Black Scorpion, despite being in league with Satan, is human.
Are you so sure?
The task of capturing the bandit would be less difficult if he had not terrorized all the peasants and small landholders into helping him. Perhaps one day they will realize there are others whose wrath they should fear even more.
Perhaps. But perhaps they already know this and consider the Black Scorpion the lesser of two evils.
We have no need of such talk, Antonio. While your troop is here, your men should feel free to fill their canteens and replenish the supply of grain for their horses, Captain.
Gracias, Don Felipe.
And as late as it is, you are welcome to spend the night, of course.
Your hospitality is much appreciated.
I suspect, though, that your quest will force you to leave on the morrow.
Unfortunately, true. Our scouts are out now, seeking the trail we will follow. Señor Morgan, I would know more of you. Your name, it is familiar to me for some reason.
North of the border, Señor Morgan is a famous gunfighter, Captain. Perhaps you have heard of the man called the Drifter?
Of a certainty. You are very well known in your country, are you not, Señor Morgan?
Oh, too well known sometimes. Trouble seems to find me whether I'm looking for it or not.
To one degree or another, that is the way of the world, is it not?
Oh, seems to be.
Father! No one informed me that we had visitors.
Ha ha ha, Señorita Almanzar. You are as beautiful as ever.
Carmen, I thought you were resting.
I was, but I feel much better now.
Allow me, Señorita.
I am not really hungry. but I would like a glass of wine.
I do not like to see you drink wine, Carmen.
I am old enough. I am old enough for many things now, Father.
Don Felipe flicked a hand at Esteban, who poured a glass of wine for Carmen. She sipped it and smiled and flirted with Captain Estancia as he made small talk with her. The faces of Don Felipe and Antonio grew darker.
The Black Scorpion!
I doubt that. The Black Scorpion has never bothered us.
Raiders, sent by Cecil Tolliver. That is more likely.
When the men reached the courtyard in front of the hacienda, they found Don Felipe's vaqueros were bunched up on one side, muttering and casting dark, furious glares toward the rurales on the other side of the courtyard. While the vaqueros all wore six guns, none of them had drawn a weapon. That was probably because the rurales had rifles leveled at them. It must have been one of the rurales who had fired that warning shot a moment earlier, Frank decided. The subject of the disagreement was in the front ranks of the Mexican police. One of Don Felipe's men was held tightly in the grasp of two of the rurales. Blood dripped from a cut on the captive's forehead.
What is going on here?
Explain yourself, Cabo!
The sergeant, a swarthy, heavy mustached man, who looked more like a bandit than any of the men Frank had seen in the camp of the Black Scorpion the previous night, gestured toward the prisoner.
This man spoke against El Presidente. He said the people would be better off without his foot on their neck. And then he called us the Ashes Dogs.
Is this true?
I only spoke what all of us feel, Don Felipe. These men come swaggering in here and eat our food and lust after our women. And when one of them demanded that I give him my tobacco, I told him that I do not share with dogs.
The sergeant turned and rammed the butt of his rifle into the vaquero's belly. He would have fallen if not for the cruelly tight grip of the men holding him.
You see? Such disrespect cannot be permitted, mi capitán.
Father, are we going to stand by and watch one of our men being treated this way?
Captain Estancia, I must protest. This is my land, and my men have the right to speak as they please.
Unfortunately, this is not the case, Don Felipe. You know it is against the law to foment rebellion against the rule of El Presidente.
Rebellion? He just didn't want to give up his tobacco to one of your men.
The Gendarmeria Fiscal is empowered to commandeer anything we may need to fulfill our mission.
But tobacco?
It is not for refusing to give up his tobacco that this man must taste the whip. It is because his disrespect is an affront to our president.
The whip?
5 lashes. It is a serious offense, but since I have such great respect for you, Don Felipe, I will levy only a minor punishment.
5 lashes. It is just.
Captain Estancia smiled and gestured for the prisoner to be brought over to a hitching post. The rest of the rurales covered the vaqueros while the sergeant drove the butt of his rifle into the small of the prisoner's back and knocked him to his knees. His hands were jerked above his head and bound with rawhide thongs to the hitching post. The man who tied the knots drew them cruelly tight. Then the prisoner's shirt was ripped off him, leaving his back bare. The sergeant went to his horse and came back holding a coiled whip. He shook the coils loose, and the whip fell loosely around his feet, slithering in the dust of the courtyard like a snake. Frank heard soft crying and looked over his shoulder. Carmen Almanzar stood at the entrance to the hacienda, tears running down her face as she watched this display of cruelty, violence, and arrogant power. Frank thought about going to her and trying to convince her to return to the house, but before he could start toward her, she turned and half ran, half stumbled back inside.
Carry out the punishment, Cabo.
The burly sergeant raised his arm and drew back the whip. His arm fell, and the whip lashed out, striking the prisoner's back diagonally and curling almost lovingly over his shoulder. The prisoner lunged forward against the hitching post, but didn't cry out. When the sergeant pulled the whip back, it left a narrow wound that oozed blood. Taking his time about it, the sergeant got ready and then struck again, this time flicking his wrist so that the lash crossed the prisoner's back in the opposite direction. The wounds formed a large crimson X on the unlucky vaquero's skin. Blood began to trickle down his back. Again the whip flashed and peeled flesh from the prisoner's back. He sagged against the post and twisted pitifully, trying futilely to escape the whip as it rose and fell yet again. After four lashes, the vaquero's back was awash with blood, and crimson droplets splattered through the air as the sergeant drew the whip back. The sergeant poised his arm for the fifth and final blow. He took a step forward as he struck, putting all the strength in his muscular body behind the whip. More blood and little gobbets of flesh flew through the air as the stroke landed. And once more, the sergeant pulled his arm back, lifting the whip to strike yet again. Without thinking about what he was doing, Frank stepped forward. With the same speed that had saved his life in many a showdown, his hand shot out. Not reaching for his gun this time, but for the sergeant's wrist instead. His fingers clamped like iron bands around that wrist before the sixth stroke of the whip could fall. Frank jerked down on the sergeant's wrist, and at the same time, his left foot hooked around the man's right ankle and tugged hard. Already off balance, the sergeant fell backward and landed heavily. Frank plucked the bloody whip out of his hand and threw it on his chest. The sergeant recoiled from it as if it really were the snake that it resembled.
Senor Morgan, you dare to interfere?
You said five lashes. That hombre is about to hit him for the sixth time.
You miscounted!
I don't think so. I've been able to count up to six for a long time.
I suppose it could have been five. On your feet, Cabo. What are you doing?
Cutting him loose.
Con permiso, Captain.
The officer nodded and flicked a hand, and Antonio went to the hitching post. He drew a knife from a sheath at his waist and sawed through the rawhide thongs. When they parted, the prisoner started to topple over. Antonio caught him and supported him, obviously not caring that he was getting blood on his fine clothes. Don Felipe signaled to his men, and several of them hurried forward to help Antonio with the whipped man. The rurales made no move to stop them. The bloodied vaquero was taken off to the bunkhouse to be cared for by his compadres.
I apologize for this unpleasantness. It is necessary, however, to maintain order and respect for the authorities and for El Presidente.
As you say.
As for you, Senor Morgan, I forgive you for your interruption. This is not your land, and you do not know our ways.
I know right from wrong.
You will find that on this side of the border, Senor, the meaning of those words sometimes differs from your American conception of them.
I don't think so.
Cabo, have the men withdraw a short distance and pitch their tents. We will remain here tonight.
Si, mi capitán.
The sergeant turned away, and a second later, he began to spit orders at the rurales.
Once again, I apologize for this unpleasantness, Don Felipe. Now, if you wish, we can resume our meal.
I no longer have much of an appetite. Dinner is over. I will have Esteban show you to your quarters.
You will tell Señorita Carmen that I said goodnight?
The vaqueros had all gone into the bunkhouse, and Antonio had gone with them. Esteban led Captain Estancia into the hacienda to escort him to his room. That left Frank and Don Felipe standing alone in the courtyard, where the dark splatters and the dust bore mute testimony to the violence that had occurred here.
You must think that we are a barbaric people.
There are barbarians among every race, and some believe that ultimately they're bound to triumph over civilized men.
And this is what you believe, Senor Morgan?
I'd like to think otherwise, Don Felipe. But sometimes, I don't know. I just don't know.